Shalom and welcome to Shnayim Mikra, the daily podcast sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted at OU.org, in which we study one aliyah a day of Parashat HaShavua. My name is Yitzchak Etshalom, and I'm honored and privileged to be studying Parashat Vayishlach Yaakov with you. We will take a look at the first aliyah today. But important to note that Parashat Vayishlach has several major stories. Really, writ large, there are three stories. There is Yaakov's return to Eretz Yisrael and his reunion with Esav, which has the very famous interjection of Yaakov's midnight wrestling match with a person, an angel, Sarosh al Esav. We'll see when we get to it. Followed by, of course, the great tragedy and challenge that happens in Shechem and the ultimate massacre of the people of Shechem, followed by Yaakov's return to Hebron. On the way, he stops in Beit El, and then south of Beit El ends up with the birth of Binyamin and the tragic death of Rachel and her burial. As a coda, we hear about the children and the tribes and the clans of Esav. That is a general overview of the Parsha. Many, many important subtexts in there. There's, of course, the story of Reuven and Bilhah and how that's to be understood, and we'll deal with it when we get to that aliyah. But in the meantime, let's begin where we should always begin, at the beginning. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv. So Yaakov now has finished with Lavan. He is separated from Lavan. They've created a treaty of separation. Yaakov is now coming south in Transjordan, through the mountains of Gilad, where, playing on the name, he erected the monument of Galed. And he sent messengers, Lefanav el Esav achiv, Arza Seir Sde Adom. So he sent them to the south, knowing that Esav had taken up residence in Seir, which is in the Arava, in southwest Jordan. So he commanded the messengers to give them a following message. Kotomrun laduni laEsav. Notice that right away he tells them that he is relating to Esav as his master. Koamar avdecha Yaakov. So again, he's my master, I'm his slave, and this is, of course, royal delegation talk. It's the etiquette of the time. Im lavan garti v'aichar ad ata. He says, I have been sojourning with Lavan, and I have been delayed until this point. And it sounds like an apology why he hasn't come to see Esav sooner. If you recall, when he left, we discussed this at the end of Parashat Toldot, when he left to run away to save his life because of Esav threatened to kill him. But Rivka was supposed to summon him when Esav cooled down. In the meantime, that never happened. And he got tied up and entangled, really, with Lavan, with the daughters, and with the children, etc. And it took him this long until he could finally leave. So what he's saying is really very accurate. Vahili shor b'chamor tzon v'eved v'shivcha. So he says, but I haven't just been doing anything there. While I was there, I became rich, and I have all of these things. Vayishlacha lahagid laduni limtzochen b'enecha. So vayishlacha is unclear. Am I sending animals? Am I sending this entourage to tell my master, tell you, in order to find favor in your eyes? What happens? Well, clearly he sent these messengers without a gift. He sent the messengers just to tell Esav that he was coming. Now, Vayashuvu ha-malachim al Yaakov lemor. So they went. Yaakov evidently camped there, sent messengers. The messengers came back, and they came back and said, Banu al-achicha el Esav. Notice that they preface Esav with achicha, your brother. The gam holech likratcha, he's coming to greet you, which if you stopped at that point, it's beautiful. You've coming to greet him, he's coming to greet you, all will be well. V'arbamioti shimo. And Yaakov hears that Esav has 400 men with him. Now, there's two ways to interpret this 400 men. After all, Yaakov himself just sent a delegation of messengers. So maybe Esav is sending a nicer delegation of messengers. He's coming with 400 men as a delegation to meet Yaakov. Instead, Yaakov reads it a certain way, and we'll never really know if he was reading it accurately, but it seems that he wasn't. Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo. He was extremely frightened and pained. Vayachatz et ha'am asher ito, v'tatzon v'tavakar v'gmolim m'shnei machanot. He split the nation, meaning he already had a huge enough tribe between his wives and the handmaids and the children and their nursemaids and other slaves. He divided them all into half, and then he divided the flock and the cattle and the camels into two camps. Vayomer, what was his reason? Now, Vayomer here, and this is an opportunity to mention this, the word Vayomer, or the verb Amar, to say, whenever it refers to oral communication, it was a verbal statement, there's always a target to that. Vayomer el Amo, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. There's somebody that's being spoken to. When you just have Vayomer, what it really means is he decided or he concluded. In English, we would say he said to himself, but there's nothing audible. Vayomer, im yavo Esav el machaneha echat vihikahu, vaya machane nishar lifleta. What's my reasoning here? Is that if Esav comes and wipes out one of the camps, the other camp be able to run away. So we're going to split them in two so that at least part will be saved. But that means, of course, that he's reading Esav's approach as being an approach of attack. And here Esav has 400 men with him. In the meantime, Yaakov has a bunch of children and women and slaves and cattle, and he's far more vulnerable. Now, the question, of course, is what happened to the promise that we read about in last week's parsha at the beginning of Vayetse, that God said, I'm going to be with you, and I'll protect you, and I'll return you, and I'll bring you back. This is indeed a problem, because Yaakov's faith seems to be not as strong as we would like it to be here. So Chazal take one particular approach in Masechet Brachot, where they suggest that Yaakov took a very modest approach to understanding his situation, and saying, God made that promise to me then, but in the meantime, perhaps I've sinned and I've lost the rights to that promise. And there's something very profound lesson in that. And that a person, even when blessed directly by God, should not get so confident and secure to think that that's a lock and that his own behavior from here on in won't make a difference. He could indeed lose that promise. There are other ways to read this, perhaps as a failure. In any case, Vayomrim, Yavosa, Isamu Machana Chatvichau, Vikaya Machana Shalifleta. And then Yaakov turns to Hashem and prays. Vayomer Yaakov, and this is the famous line where it's said, where we say that Yaakov prepared for Esav with three different things. He tried appeasement, which we're going to read about a little later. He prepared for war. War in this case really meant surrender and running away. So I'm splitting the camp in two, and he prepared with tefillah. Vayomer Yaakov, Elohei Avi Avraham, Elohei Avi Yitzchak. He addresses God as the God of his father Avraham and the God of his father Yitzchak, Adonai ha'omer elai, shuv li'artzecha l'moladetecha v'etiv ha'imach. You're the God who said that I should come back to the land, as we saw at the end of Vayetse, and I will treat you well. So in other words, I'm doing what you said, and now look what I'm coming to. Katonti mikol ha'chasidim mikol ha'met. So in order that we should not think that Esav that Yaakov is complaining to God and is challenging God on his own terms, he adds in this bit of humility. I'll say two things about this pasuk. Katonti mikol ha'chasadim mikol ha'emet asher asita tavdecha, which may mean I am not worthy of all of the great things you've given me, or I have become diminished as a result of the great things you've given me. That's a machloket Rashi Ramban. We'll talk about it in a minute. Mikol ha'chasadim mikol ha'emet asher asita tavdecha, that you've done with me. Now notice, he's calling God his master, he's calling Esav his master. He is the slave of God, he's the slave of Esav. Everybody he addresses as avdecha. That will play a critical role in understanding the interaction he has later with the Malach, where his name gets changed, or the promise of a future name change to Yisrael. When I crossed this river that I'm facing, I'm looking at the river now in front of me to the west, he's still in Transjordan, when I crossed this river originally to go up to Haran, all I had was a stick in my hand. I had nothing with me. And now I come back and I have two full camps. But then he turns and says, Hatzileni na. So that is a form of thanksgiving. Saying, God, you've given me so much. Hatzileni na, of course, means now. Hatzileni now miyan achi miyan Esav. Save me now from my brother, from Esav. And notice that the same term that the slave, that the messengers used, achicha Esav, he uses here, miyan achi miyan Esav. I'm concerned that he's going to come and kill me, mother and children together. And there's a little bit of a play here that may play out later in Parshat Ki Tetzeh when the Torah commands us to send the mother away before taking the eggs. And it says as if Yaakov's perception of Esav is that he's even more brutal than the way that we would possibly treat fowl. In the meantime, v'ata amarta hitevitivimach, but he comes back to the complaint, as it were. You told me that you would treat me well. And you said that you would make my children, and this is going back to the promise at Beit El, as numerous as the sand by the sea, that, well, can't be counted because there's so many of them. Right? But, of course, if Esav comes and kills me, then that's going to be the end of that promise. So he seems to be turning his argument to God in two directions. First of all, God, you got to save me because you're the one who told me to come back here, and now you put me into the middle of this trap, as it were. The second thing is that if Esav does execute the plan that he seems to be putting together now, then the promise that you gave me that I'm going to have so many children, etc., is going to be destroyed. So he throws it into God's lap, as it were, but that doesn't mean that he rests on that. And as we'll see in the next Aliyah, he sends a huge gift, and then, of course, there is the, I wouldn't call it exactly military preparation, but there's the strategic preparation for the meeting with Esav and how it plays out. Again, as I mentioned, I want to look back at Pasuk Yod Aleph. In some Chumashim, it's Pasuk Yod Aleph. In any case, so one little vort is this happens to be the eighth Pasuk in the Parsha, wherever you claim the Parsha starts. Some people read that the Parsha starts in Pasuk Dalad, some people in Pasuk Gimel, depending how you divide the chapters. But regardless, Vayishlach, this is the eighth Pasuk of Vayishlach. There's a passage in Masachat Sotah at the beginning where the discussion of haughtiness, of ga'ava, and it's presented as one of the things that a person should just stay far away from. And there's opinion mentioned in the Gemara that a Tamil Chacham should have Shminit Shebishminit. Now Shminit Shebishminit is like the tiniest little measure. It's what we call a kortov, the smallest liquid measure. Shminit Shebishminit of Ga'ava, and it's like a kind of a glory, a little bit of honor, a little bit of pride. And then the next opinion of the Gemara says, no, minevel mitzatei, not even a little bit. No, it's not a good thing to have. So the Gaon Mivilna says, Shminit Shebishminit, a very interesting point. What's the eighth parsha? The eighth parsha is our parsha, Shminit Vayishlach. And what is the eighth pasuk in Vayishlach? Katonti. So he says, even that eighth of an eighth that Talmud Chacham is supposed to have is katonti mikol chasidim, an awareness that he's really not worthy of all of the great things that Hashem has given him. Nonetheless, katonti mikol chasidim mikol anat, as I mentioned, is read two ways, which are not parallel ways at all. According to Rashi, katonti mikol chasidim, katonti is a verb, or shall we say a result. I have become small as a result of all of the great things that you have done for me, kol ha-chasidim, kol ha-met. And the notion is, and this is one that Rashi, through his Perush in Sefer Bereshit, utilizes, he uses it in the middle of Vatlech Lecha, when Avram is afraid, and that Hashem comforts him, he's afraid that he's lost his schuyot, his merit, that he gained, as a result of needing God's help in the war against the kings. Here, Yaakov is claiming that he has become unworthy of the greatness. In other words, all the greatness that's been given to him has made him diminish his schuyot that he would need to win this war. On the other hand, the Ramban says, katonti mikol chasadim is a statement of fact. I am not worthy of, I am smaller than the chasadim and the met. And the real difference is how you read the mem. Is the mem a relative mem or a causative mem? In other words, katonti mikol achasadim, I have become small as a result of mikol achasadim, because of these chasadim, or katonti a relative mem, like tov shem mi shem and tov, a name is greater than good oil. In the same way, it's a comparative, really, in which case katonti mi, I'm smaller than, I'm not worthy enough to have all of these kind things happen. There's an interesting thing with that particular word katonti that those of us who are Ba'alei Kriya are sensitive to. And that is that in the Aleppo Codex And in most of the Chumashim, the ta'am on the word katonti is an azla. Katonti. It's read that way. However, in the Leningrad Codex, which the Koren Tanakh has, it is a reviyah. Katonti. And really the difference between those two ta'amim, both of which are minor stoppers, but they're a different level of minor stoppers, might make a difference in how we understand the pasuk. Because if we read katonti as really a word that sits by itself, katonti, I have become small. From what? Mikol ha-chasadim, mikol ha-met, that's Rashi. If on the other hand we read it as somewhat more connected, as in the case of the Azla, then it would be comparative, like the Ramban reads. So it indeed is possible that the different way that we read the pasuk may depend on which trope mark is there, and of course it depends on how we interpret the mem. In any case, we've taken a look at the introduction, I've taken a look at the scope of the parsha, taken a look at this first pre-meeting between Yaakov and Esav, and pointed out a few nuances here and there, and taken a brief excursus into looking at the Ta'amehamikra, the trope marks, and how they may affect our parshanut, our understanding of the text. Tomorrow we will take a look at the second aliyah in which Yaakov sends the great gift, and of course at the after sending the gift we have that famous nighttime scene, and we will see something quite interesting in regards to that as the approach to the Rashbam to that entire passage. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.